Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to Leadership Lean In. This is a very exciting episode. Is that what we call these episodes? I am joined by some of my favorite people in the world. I think you're going to really enjoy them. Hey, as always, I want to give a huge shout out and a huge thank you to everyone that has been liking and commenting. Thank you for subscribing on YouTube to check this out. We're trying to do our best to deliver great guests and great content. I thought the last episode with Pastor Jensen Franklin, if you missed that one, you got to go back and check it out. As always, we want to do our best job to invest in the leaders. Leadership Lean In really started with the idea of saying, let's get some people around the table and lean in, discuss, trying to improve and get better at our leadership skills. By no means, I'm about to turn 40 years old, people. We are 1 month away from turning 40. By no means am I suggesting that we have it all figured out. But what I realize about any subject is the more you lean into it, or any relationship, the more you lean into it, it leans into you. So we're leaning into leadership, leaning into wisdom, trying to get a little bit better. So today, we are joined by three of the greatest, I think, especially in our context, because some of the three of the best leaders that I know lead at a very, very high level in our context at Zoe Church. 4 years old. 4 year anniversary. Just happened last week. Happy birthday, Zoe. And these three have been a part of the church since before it started, when it was really just announced and it was an idea. And kind of, so to speak, sold everything you had, moved to LA, and gave it all up to build God's house. So all three of you I respect a great deal, and I've known for a long time, and have all, I always think it takes hard work to reinvent yourself and to evolve and to grow with an organization. And I've watched all of you guys go from literally 11 people in our living room to now a significant amount of people doing a great work here in LA. So I will introduce you, nicknames and all.
Yep. Oh, geez.
Here they come.
Here comes number one. She is no stranger to the Leadership Lean In podcast. She is Leadership Lean In's Tanya Rad. Oh, or is the other one Sissany?
Great compliment.
Is that Sissany's the other one?
Yeah.
Erica, the Boss Bosco, is on the, yeah, I think a good clap. We'll be hearing from Erica. We love Roman and Erica. Roman and Erica are getting ready to lead our East location.
Yeah. Let's go.
Launching very soon. We're so excited about that. We have over here Nate Doomlau. And I will call him by his nickname, Nate Dog. And I've known Nate Dog since he was a high schooler, and really have seen him just grow into an incredible father, incredible husband, leads our college, is a phenomenal preacher.
Yes.
Thing about Nate that is so scary good about him is he's funny. He's not just very, very
funny. Self-deprecating.
Yeah, he's self-deprecating. You have the best self-deprecating humor, but I think you're very funny, very intelligent. Julie and I often refer to you as the smartest person on our staff.
Oh, gosh.
And I believe that about you. We have over here the GM.
Hey.
Come on.
The general manager. You've got the title boss.
She's the actual
boss. But she's the actual boss. We have Kel Dog. Wait, you guys both have dogs. That's not cool. We got to get more creative around here. We have, in my phone.
Killing it,
Kelly Eisman.
Yeah, she has two nicknames.
Killing it, Kelly Eisman, because she's always killing it. Kelly, it's great to have you on. This is your first time on?
First time.
This is your first time?
It is.
Oh my, we got some newbies.
Whoa.
Exciting.
I'm nervous.
We got some fresh rooks. I'm going to jump right in today. What we're talking about is, we brought on some team because I want to talk about team and part of being a leader is not just leading yourself, but learning how to lead others. And whenever you, have a team, there are team dynamics. And the more we're talking about this actually on Sunday, the more team you have or the more people you have, usually the more mess you have.
Right.
And that's just the reality. The proverbs that would go with that, the proverb would be where there are no oxen, the trough is clean. So if you don't have anybody on the team, you don't have any problems. But the more team you have, usually the more issues that you have. So I want to talk together. And Nate, we could start with you. What makes a great team? You've been a part of a lot of teams. Yeah. What makes a great team?
What makes a great team? I mean, there's so much I can go into making a great team. The teammates, the team lead makes for a great team.
Yeah.
And really what that describes is unity. So making sure there's unity within the team, not just unity within relationships, but unity of vision.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than having a team where maybe a teammate has a different vision than the team lead.
Wow.
Or someone's going to go rogue or sideways. But if everyone has the same vision, it doesn't matter the competency. That can get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That can grow. But if there's unity in chemistry and vision, then you're going to have a dynamic team that's growing.
Yeah.
I think another big thing is an inclusive team.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
constantly trying to include new members, include and value the ones that are already there.
Yeah.
You can get caught up in trying to get new people and devalue the ones that are already there.
Yeah. That's
so
great.
Making sure that you're bringing people in.
Yeah.
But the other side of that is unity and then communication. If you can have a team that is all about communication, committed to communicate with each other, committed to communicate with other teams and team leads, then you're going to find a really dynamic and powerful team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes with, it doesn't matter the industry or the context of team. I want to talk to killing it, Kelly Eisman over here. First timer. Kelly, out of this table, is the only Division I athlete.
Yeah, I was never an athlete.
Played in a, you played in a national championship game?
Final four.
Final four.
Yeah,
two final fours?
One final four.
And full ride scholarship, University of Washington, the greatest university the history of the world.
Absolutely.
Go Dogs. You played on some really great teams. What, in your opinion, what makes a great team?
I mean, I think you said a lot of like the big picture things, you know, just, but also being able to lead yourself. If you have a bunch of teammates who are able to lead themselves also and have personal responsibility for, you know, I want to be a part of something, you know, a small part of something big.
Yep.
You know, great. I think that's everything. I want to be a part of a big organization, even if I just play the smallest part. So having vision, having direction, having clear communication. I think a lot of times you find teams and there's no real expectation communicated to the team. The leader's frustrated because they think they've communicated something and the team's just kind of running in all different directions. So when you're, you know, in a spot where the team is, I know the vision. They can all repeat the vision. The vision is clearly something that they can identify, that they can teach when it's teachable for your teammates.
Yeah.
I think that's powerful that they can grab onto the vision and teach it to others. I think you're building leaders. I think when there's room to be on team, I think when there's room to grow, I think
that's
huge. It's you said being inclusive, but it's so easy to say and very difficult. I think it's one of the hardest things to actually implement is making room for people on your team.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you want to just do it yourself. It's quicker. It's easier if I'm doing it myself.
Yeah.
But in the reality, in the business we're in, it's all about people. In the business we're in, it's how can I get people involved? You know, it changed my life by just serving on a team and being a part of something big.
Mm.
You know, even outside of sports, when we're talking about ministry, it's we're a part of something. It's the call of God on your life. It's the call of God to serve the local church. So when you have that in mind, you're like, I want to get as many people involved as I can because it builds your, you know, some people have never been a part of a team environment.
Right.
So it's something very fresh, very new to people. So when you get people involved in that, I think it's powerful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think that's so clear when it's clear.
Right.
This is where we're going. I think it not only allows the team members that are on the team to really flourish, but you're right. It feels like people can jump in at any point.
Right.
And it's not like, hey, you sit back there because we've all been here.
Right.
Right.
It's like when the vision's clear, it's like, hey, guess what? Anybody can grab this and be a part of the team.
Yeah.
And there becomes, I think the team loyalty, it really happens when the vision is clear.
Right.
It's not just because we're on the team.
Right.
Right.
It's like we're working for a championship or we're working for, in our case, something bigger than ourselves to see people, you know, come to find freedom and come to know the Lord. So I totally agree with that. But I think part of being a part of a team is just knowing that conflict's going to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the reality is that the team is usually a reflection of the leader.
Yeah.
That's kind of the hardest part about leadership is that I wish it was the team's fault, but a lot of time it's my fault.
Right.
The team carries my attitude usually, or my dysfunction, or my, you know, the dark side of, there's a dark side to every leader.
Right.
So we're talking about a few things that make a good team. I think it's always important that I always pause and go, well, what could hurt the team? What makes a bad team or a bad teammate, a bad team lead? Erica, you've been a part of a lot of teams and led a lot of different teams in your career. I start calling it a career. Yeah. You know, in your career.
Well, like, you know, in my days.
Your athletic career.
Yeah, in your athletic career.
My athletic career, okay.
Were you a cheerleader in high school? I think you were.
I remember this.
Yep. In the valley right over there.
And I just have to say on record, I don't think it's a sport. So.
Oh, hot take.
I'm just saying.
Okay, it is a hot take right there. Wow. I don't know if we're going to edit that out. No, I'm kidding. But what makes a bad team? That's some of the things that make a good team. What makes a bad team?
I think morale and chemistry and synergy like play a lot into the health of the team. Mm. And I think when you have negativity, a bad attitude, a bad perspective, like if you've ever been in a group text where everyone's saying, everyone's cheering, everyone excited, and then there's one person that like kills the vibe.
Yep.
I think that's what you can do with a team when you don't show up, you're not on time, you're not communicating, I think not executing what's expected from you as a teammate really kills the team as well.
Right.
And I think it's the exact opposite of what makes a good team. So not being able to communicate where you're at. Hey, I need some help. I don't know how to do that. I don't feel comfortable. Right. Can you train me a little bit more? And then also just not showing up for your teammates.
Yep.
You know,
I always think we get ourselves in trouble when anybody gets bigger than the team.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So then we go, okay, this person's talent, this person's ability. And what's so crazy is the rest of the team knows it.
Yeah.
Right. The rest of the team's watching going, you're letting this person get away with X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But we're all held accountable to a different set of rules.
Yeah. Wow.
And I love the whole thought on teams, character over talent.
Yes.
Yep.
Talent is like, it comes and goes. Talent is, is a dime a dozen. It reminds me of that Proverbs 31 that, you know, beauty is passing, it's fading, but a woman that fears the Lord shall be praised.
Yeah.
In other words, it's like, it's not about talent.
Yeah.
Right.
It's about character. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of teams get themselves in trouble when they're like, here are the rules, but we're only going to hold these people accountable to them, but not them. And I think teams... One of the things I'm always thinking about is how does the team feel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, one of you used the word chemistry. I think that the chemistry of a team might be just as important as the vision of the team.
Totally. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Because if that conflict, which I want to talk about conflict, if that conflict gets too, you know, overbearing, too taxing, the rules, I think great teams aren't great because they have a whole bunch of rules.
Yeah, right. No.
You know, it's almost like less rules, more of a value of each other.
Yes.
And the vision and things take off. Bad teammates to me are anybody, like you said, doesn't show up, has a bad attitude, but starts to think I'm bigger than the rest of you.
Yeah.
And so I can kind of come and go and do what I want. I'm no longer leaning into the team. I'm leaning into self.
Right.
That is a dangerous place. Which brings us to any team has conflict. Any team is going to have things that you address. On a team, you're not always going to win.
Yeah. Right.
Remember that women's basketball team, UConn, Brianna Stewart and those guys, I think she lost one game in 4 years.
Jeez.
Right. Like 4 year, you know, player of the year. And, you know, just that is the exception. You're one in history. Most teams struggle. Most teams plateau. Most teams have growing pains.
Yeah.
Nobody just grows like this.
Right.
You plateau and then you grow. And with that, as a team, there becomes conflict. Let's talk about conflict on a team. And when conflict happens in a team, how do you handle that as a team lead and as a teammate? What would you say? How do you handle conflict when it comes in the team?
Yeah, I think like first identifying that it's going to come. You're saying when there's people around, you're going to have issues. Yeah. And not being afraid of that, but hitting that head on.
Yep.
You know, I think it's so easy to say someone else will deal with that. But I even think it's a personal challenge of mine to say, you know, it's better for the whole team if I address it early on. I care for this person and realizing that like you care for the people that you're right. able to have those conversations right. with. Yeah. When right. you're able to have that conversation, it's saying, I love you enough to not let you stay this way. It could be a blind side that you have no right. idea you're even doing it this way. But yeah, just hitting it head on and yeah. and just caring about the whole of the team and knowing that you're not offended. It's not a personal
right.
thing. It's we're all here for the same vision, and it's pushing the vision forward. It's not being self-centered. It's not self-driven. I'm not a hothead, you know, saying you're not doing it the way I want you to do right. it. But right, it's right. just saying, you know, this is for the health of the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
If my heart's healthy, if I'm in a good place, I'm knowing that this is coming out of a good spot in general, yeah. and just going with your gut on that.
Right, right. Yeah, I always think if someone brings conflict to me, if they have my best interest in mind, I'm so down to listen.
Right. right.
Yeah. If I can sense you're just trying to just blow steam.
Exactly.
This is about you, not about me.
Right.
And so like I'm all ears to somebody that's like, I want to help you with this.
Yeah.
I want right. to help serve you. I don't think you notice. I don't think you realize. I don't know if you understood what was at stake right there
right.
or whatever it has to be. That's got to be the motive. And until yeah. oftentimes when I feel like I have conflict with somebody, I'll probably wait a day or two mm-hmm. and sleep on it a little bit. Because right. if I come to it on the moment,
right.
it's not going right. to come out the way that it could be right. so productive and helpful.
Yes. Right.
Exactly. So I'll wait a couple of days and then go like, let's sit down. Because now it's not about me and my emotions. Now it's actually about the real issue and
right.
about right. serving the person.
Right.
But I always think conflict is not that hard, because the way that we try and look at it, as Zoe especially, is that conflict is just clarity.
Yes. Right.
right.
Totally.
We're just so clarifying yeah. an expectation, clarifying a value,
yep.
clarifying where we see this person and how we see life in leadership. That is so much easier than going like, you didn't text back
right.
or you dropped the ball.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, it's not right. about the drop ball. It's right. about the right. value that goes behind
right.
that
right.
or the principle.
Right.
And we want to see you go to another level. I also think people can't get better without being addressed.
Right.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
like you just, I hate when people say, you know, in our context, we do ministry, and sometimes people will say ministry is caught, not taught. And I don't agree with that. I don't see that in Jesus's leadership, because Jesus would often teach and he would let the disciples catch it, but then he would go sit alone with them
right.
and look them yeah. in the eyes and go, do you realize I did this because of this?
Right. right.
So he was letting them catch it, but then he was teaching
so
them.
Right.
And I think we have to address people. We owe it to people. Mm. And I think conflict, actually, if you clarify it well, it builds more trust.
Yeah.
Right.
If it's healthy, 100%. You're building so much trust.
It's like, wow, so-and-so just corrected me or clarified.
Right.
And I feel like they love me and they're for right. me and they're
yeah.
with
right.
me. And
totally.
This is a great question. How do you correct people and make them feel better about themselves? When they leave the office, they're going like, man,
right.
How do you do that? Nate, you've got to leave the college. Yeah. You have to do this nonstop.
Nate?
I feel like this is every day. But I think when you speak to people's identity, who they're called to be.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Versus yeah. Yeah. what they're maybe going through in the moment.
Yeah.
And your mistake or your failure or whatever you're going through doesn't define you. And so,
yeah.
you know, communicating and having those conversations, speaking to their potential, to their promise, to their calling,
that's
to
great.
The greatest they can be from the very beginning. Hey, this is not who you are. You're so much better than this.
Yeah.
I've seen you at such a different level.
Yeah.
And explain to me, give me some understanding. How come this happened this way? You know,
yeah.
and all of a sudden you're already starting from a place instead of at a deficit, you're starting. Hey, I know you're used to being up here.
Yeah.
And right now you're just operating. Let's get you back. I think you're so much better than this.
Yeah.
And speaking vision, life, that's potential so over them right away.
That's great.
And I think if you, like we already said, if you can have the conversation quickly, don't let it build up over time. Now you don't have, you know, a debt sheet of like, hey, this. You know, I think our team is so good at right away identifying and saying, hey, this is just a small thing.
Yep.
And having the understanding going, this isn't personal. This is
right.
We're all in the for the organization, the health of the organization.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to do it. And understanding that hard conversations aren't really hard.
Yeah.
The build up to the conversation is.
Right.
Once you get in them, 99% of the time, you leave going like, that was way better than I thought it was. The hard part was just having a conversation, getting there in the first place.
I always love the sandwich method. Yeah. You know, that there's some meat in there, but there's a lot of bread.
Yeah.
And I always think if I got to correct somebody, I got to, you know, bring a lot of love on the front and a lot of love on the back.
Yep.
And a lot of love on the front for me is always trying to identify for people so they know I am aware of my weaknesses.
Yes. Right.
So before right. I want to talk to you about this issue, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page.
Right.
I realize I have failed you in A, I dropped the ball in B.
So good.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
not that good at C.
Right.
And just me identifying, I think most people have an issue with their leader if they're like, hey, you're talking to me about this, but do you realize that you
right.
And just the fact that I'm aware of it can sometimes help right. people go,
diffuses
okay,
it right yeah. away.
I'm all
so
ears.
True.
Because yep. we can talk about my weaknesses just as long as you're aware that you have weaknesses.
This is a mutual
totally.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because then it's all about the growth of everybody,
right.
not just
so
the growth
good.
Of you.
Right.
So I think that's really important. It brings me to the next thing I want to talk about, which is the tension of micromanaging people. Because mm-hmm. Leadership is this thing where I got to give a long leash and I got to let people have the room to fail.
Yeah.
Right.
And I can't be over their shoulder going, you did this wrong. Why is this? You know, otherwise you just exhaust people.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
That's probably the hardest thing for me is I want to address everything. And sometimes I got to be like, hey, just let that one go.
Yeah.
Right.
You
yes.
know, don't exhaust people. You know, that verse where it says husbands don't, or fathers don't exhaust your children,
right.
exasperate them. Mm-hmm. So it's like if the Bible's saying that to dads as leaders, we can't exhaust our teammates.
Right.
We can't exhaust the people under us. So I have to have a tension between like, you know, what is empowering and what is kind of micromanaging. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily on a task always, but just overall. Erica, what would you say about that? Like the tension between,
yeah.
first of all, do you believe in micromanaging? When I say micromanaging, what do you think about?
I think that it has a negative connotation to the word, but I fully believe in it.
So do I.
I don't think that you can
record.
Properly empower somebody without a season or like a moment of micromanaging
yeah.
to really fully release them in what they're doing. Mm. And then if you release them and you don't manage them, now you've just like sent them off with
yeah.
really no
right.
feedback. There's no leash. They just have gone.
Right.
Wow.
And I think what I've learned over the years of like being on team with you and our team with micromanaging, I think there's a level of commitment that you have to have. A lot of times it's just the person and knowing like this person needs me to follow up on these three areas after I've already communicated it. And I know that about them.
Yeah.
And so I've just found like, it's okay to follow. Like I know three certain people, I have to micromanage them on the same thing every
yeah.
time. Myself, I have to micromanage on the same thing every time. And a lot of that's just working that out and learning not to have to be micromanaged that way.
Sure.
Right.
But I think as we're empowering people, understanding where their weaknesses are so that you can get ahead of it.
Yeah.
Great.
And help.
Right.
Like, I want to know where yeah. I need to be micromanaged so that I don't have to anymore.
Right.
And so I think learning about the people that you're working with and that you're on team with and helping them grow as you're growing.
Right.
I think it's really important.
Right.
In that sphere of
right.
empowerment versus micromanaging.
That's good.
And then knowing when to let something go. Like you said,
yeah.
like you can't control everything.
Right.
And the biggest tension I found with empowerment and versus micromanaging is if you do it too much, now they're scared to make a move.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather have to pull you back in because you like got a little too passionate and you like did a little too much than you don't make a move at all because I didn't tell you to.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I've been learning as a leader and building my team of, I want to tell you how to do this, but I want you to feel like you can do this if I'm not here.
Right.
So
right.
I think finding that tension and letting people run.
Yeah, it is. It is such an incredible tension. It
yeah.
really is, you know, and I could argue both sides.
Right.
You know, because it's like, do we believe in empowerment? It's like, come on, what leader
yeah,
doesn't?
Right.
We're talking about, you know, our model is Jesus, who's like, okay, you 70, two here, two there. Just
have a go.
Have a go.
Yeah.
Preach.
Yeah.
Shake off the dust. If they don't like you, you guys will be great.
Yeah.
They come back.
You're
they're
good.
Like, we saw Satan fall. Wow. You know, It's so I can argue that. So I can argue this side of micromanaging could also be argued as responsibility.
Yeah.
Right.
Being responsible. Mm-hmm. I always feel this every Saturday. Every Saturday comes this big burden on me of responsibility.
Yeah.
Mm. That you're kind of, you know, under this like, hey, how's, you know, the parking? How's, you know, like you just start thinking about all the details that we're going in. And my feeling is always like, I just want to make sure I know that we're good.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
And if we just kind of just let people go out and just like, oh, we're going to trust them and there's no communication.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's always that tension. I feel like a lot of, we talk about this, a lot of little meetings take a big meeting. Mm.
Yeah.
So it's not about micromanaging in terms of just staying on somebody with a constant communication. It's about, I think, having appropriate meetings that allow you to be in communication, that you're kind of participating. I think most leaders get themselves in trouble when they're just like, have a go.
Yes.
Right.
And abdicate the responsibility of participating.
Mm. Right.
Because when you participate with people, it's like you're micromanaging me, but neither of us would ever use that terminology.
No.
Right.
You're leading me.
Right.
You're leading. You're participating. Yeah. You're with me.
Yep. Yes. We're doing this together.
Yeah. So I think that's where it gets the bad connotation is like, hey, we're just, I'd rather have people go like, I'm just glad that I've got input. I've got clear communication. I've got access to you. I've got, you know, we're talking about this 3 weeks before it, not 3 days before.
Yeah.
It.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? What do you say about this, Kelly? You have to do this all constantly.
Yeah. I believe in micromanaging. I think there's an aspect of trust building in that. I think if you're micromanaging, you're checking in, you're saying, how are you doing? Where are you at with this? Again, I always bring things back to sports. So, you know, we were a part of a team that watched film on ourselves practicing, not just games. We watched ourselves practicing. You know, if you don't know, you have a habit that you've built up. A lot of times people have no idea that they do that. And it could be a percentage or a millimeter of, did you know that your fingers did this when you play this sport? But I think in the same way, when you're teaching someone, there's a level of micromanaging where you have, it has such a bad connotation, but just checking in and saying, hey, I didn't throw you the ball and say, have a great time out there. You know, you're going to do great, but coming alongside them and, you know, also correcting as they go, letting them fail, but also being there to save them when they fail, you know?
Right.
I think there's a level of, there's a lot of leaders that just point fingers because it's like, well, they failed, you know? Leaders say, no, we failed together. Yep. Like, let me teach you. Next time we'll do it this way. Next time we'll just adjust a tiny bit. A lot of times it's just small, small conversations, but letting them have input, letting them have, you know, just able to dream in the same lane that you're running in, just say, hey, what do you think? Giving an opportunity to talk, I think is huge. But yeah, I believe in micromanaging for sure.
No, but I think most of the times when people fail, my first thought is, what did I do wrong?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
I did not set them up. I missed it. I should have seen that. I should have had the ability to say this should have been turned in by this time.
Right.
Or we should have walked through this. I never think it's so-and-so's fault.
It's not finger pointing.
It's mine.
Right.
It's my poor leadership. So I think that's really, really important. We're talking about teams. We're talking about conflict, micromanaging. All of this comes into play. And there becomes a amount of virtue that you give and energy that you're giving to, you know, think and be a team lead. And there's conflict. And, you know, with all that you're giving, how do you stay excited? Because there's a lot going out. You know, like I always think one of my favorite stories when, and everybody preaches it, it's, you know, probably everybody's favorite passage as preachers to preach, when the woman reaches out and then Jesus goes, who touched me? And everybody wants to make that joke. Jesus, really? You're going to ask who touched you? Come on. You know everything. Like it's that classic. Whole bit, right? It's that classic preacher line. But I think what Jesus realized was that life went out from him.
Yes. Wow.
Virtue left him.
Wow. Right.
How do you, when you're giving so much away to teammates, the organization, what's in your heart, how do you stay excited? I think for me personally, this is my biggest challenge.
Yeah.
Is how do I stay excited? We just turned four this Sunday. How do I stay excited about what I'm doing, about getting on planes and doing podcasts and preaching? How do I stay excited? What about for you guys? How do you guys stay excited? think they both looked at you, Nate. Yeah. So you're going, well, I think, okay.
Like
that was a clear.
That was a natural progression. Okay, like great. You ended the question there. You know?
Yeah. That's a great question. And I think it takes intentionality is a big part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, rest is part of it. You know, being healthy with your diet and your body, that's all part of it. If you're not, then it's easy for just your body not to feel up. But I think keeping vision in front of you, this is a really simple one, is just finding wins to celebrate constantly.
Yeah.
So you could have a horrible, you know, quarter, or you could have a bad Sunday or whatever, a bad launch for something. But if you can find something within that to still celebrate, this thing stays exciting.
Yeah.
It's when you chain together a bunch of losses or you chain together a bunch of negative things and don't celebrate or call out even the smallest thing, then it stops being exciting.
Huge. Right?
But then if you can chain a few of those wins together, all of a sudden it's, you know, when you're winning, everything goes well.
Right.
And that's part of it. I think the other part is keeping the goal in front of you, keeping the vision in front of you, keeping progress in front of you.
Yep.
As soon as that gets behind you, you go from excitement to exhaustion really fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just start doing tasks, you know, you just start showing up to work, you know.
Yeah.
But if you can keep it in front of you, you're like, oh my gosh, we're going somewhere.
Right.
Can you see it? I can't wait for that thing. We took a step closer. You know, you get a little excited. And I think introducing new faces, you know, in our context, introducing new faces onto our teams, introducing new elements, you know, if you're in a leadership organization, maybe outside of a church and you're not adding to your team constantly, adding new facets, you know, going to, you know, getting out of the office and going to have fun, you know, going to the beach for us is so, you know, whatever, to the movies, just doing something to keep this thing lively and new and fresh.
New segments.
Yep.
Yeah,
new
absolutely. Segments,
yeah.
Speaking of segments, we're going to take a break right here. I want to pick this back up and talk about what keeps you guys, you know, going and your cup full. But we're going to go to this episode's top five leadership lean in for this month's episode. Let's check it out. Okay, this month's top five leadership lean in, I want to talk about the idea of becoming a wise master builder. This comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 3, and Paul says that he's not just a builder, he's a master builder. Whatever you're doing, whatever sphere of influence you have, I don't want you just to do it. I want you to become the best at it. We don't want to just build. We want to become master builders. I love this about Jim Collins' book, From Good to Great. We don't want to just do the good stuff. We want to do the great stuff. I believe that for your life and your leadership, there is greatness all over you. Why do I believe this? Because you have been made by God, and you've been made and created to do good works, great works, becoming a wise master builder. I want to show you five things. These are all things that wise master builders carry. Here's the first one. Write down number one. So great leaders carry number one. They're always leaning in to learn. I love this. They're always taking the time, never arriving, never coasting off their education, never saying, I figured it out. No, they're taking time. They're always leaning in to learn. Teach me what I don't know. One of my favorite books is called The Things I've Learned Since I Knew It All. Maybe you think that you know it all. You and I don't know a thing. We don't know a fraction or a percent of what we should know and what we need to know. You need help. I need help. We need mentors. We need podcasts. We need YouTubes. We need to lean in. And whatever you lean into, it leans back into you. And that's why it's called Leadership Lean In. You and I are just taking time to lean into the culture and to the subject of leadership. And as we lean into leadership, it's going to lean back into us and we're going to become better. The best leaders I know are consumed with learning more. They're avid book readers. They ask questions. One of my favorite things about Pastor Greg Rochelle, last summer, I was in his city and he texted me and said, would you like to have lunch? And so long story short, I got to go have lunch with one of my favorite leaders, Pastor Craig. I was a little bit nervous, the biceps. And I walked in and he had prepared questions for my time with him. he starts asking me questions. I go, Pastor Craig, this is inappropriate. You're not going to ask me questions. I'm here to learn from you. I had all my questions prepared and written down in my notes, but here is a guy that has a church of over 100,000, over 1 million people subscribe to his monthly podcast, and he's asking me questions? Yeah, because wise master builders are always leaning in to learn a little bit more. Here's the second thing. The blame always starts with them. They're never throwing people under the bus. Don't be a leader that blames others for where you're at. Don't be someone that's, you know, saying it's so-and-so's fault and if they could pick up the slack and if they do their job. No, responsibility always starts with me. Where we are, all the failure and the blame starts with me and all the success and the praise goes to the team. Great leaders, wise master builders are the first people to go, I'm the problem. I'm the cog in the wheel. I'm the one that's bottlenecking. I need to change. I need to evolve. And because they're willing to reinvent, because they're willing to evolve, because they're willing to grow with their organization, they're the ones that become the wise master builders. You'll never get anywhere blaming so-and-so for, I just love this about Joseph. He didn't blame his brothers for putting him in a pit or a palace or Potiphar's house or Pharaoh's kingdom. He said, God chose to raise me this way. Take responsibility. Let it be a God thing and a you thing for where you're at. Number three, they're happy in their grace. This is so important. Don't tolerate your grace. Celebrate your grace. Don't just go like, yeah, this is my grace. I always think an inferior spirit compares themselves with others and says, I'm not as good as so-and-so. I got given one or I got given three, but so-and-so got given five. You know what? Here's my value. If I've only got one talent, I'm going to go partner with the five talent and together we got six and together we're just going to have a good time. I'm happy in my grace. I'm secure in my calling. I'm confident in who God created me to be. I'm excited about his plan for my life. Until you get there, you can't build anything great and you can't attract anybody great. People want to follow a secure leader. They want to be around someone that's comfortable in their own skin. So leadership starts with you going, you know what? God's got a plan for my life. I've got a call from God himself. I've got a future that he's laid out, and it's not just of obscurity. It's not just of inferiority. No, it's plans to prosper. I've got a hope and I've got a future. And when you start getting happy in your grace, other people start coming along going, hey, tell me about your grace. Tell me about your lane. How did you get to be so secure? Well, I didn't get secure comparing myself with somebody else. I became secure of fixing my eyes on who God's called me to be and fixing my eyes on God. Be confident, be courageous, be secure, love yourself. Until you love yourself, you can't love somebody else. That's why the second greatest commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. I'll never love others if I don't love me. I gotta love me and love my grace. Write down number four, faith for more. Wise master builders, they always see more and they always see more before anybody else. No one else can see your dreams. No one else can see that vision. There's more in your life and more for your future, and you gotta have faith. What is faith? It is belief, it is trust, it is confidence. I've got belief and I've got trust and I've got confidence that I've seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come. And the best builders believe, yeah, what I just built is great, but we're about to build something even stronger, even better, even greater than before. The best builders to me never sit back in their lazy boy recliner chairs and cheers to so-and-so, and let's just sit back and let's survey and let's, you know, drink the fruit of our labor and let's just enjoy what we've built. No, they're hungry and they're passionate for more. I love this about Hillsong Church and Pastor Brian Houston. Just when you think they've accomplished enough, they go and plant another campus. They go start a Hillsong channel. They put out another album. They release it for the next generation. They're empowering more communicators and more leaders, and they're taking more ground. They're never satisfied with what they've built because wise master builders have faith for, say it, more. I heard you say it. Here's the last one. Number five, they live a life that inspires. In actuality, what you built is not going to inspire everybody, but who you are will inspire every person you encounter. Most people that interact with you, they don't even know what you've built. And quite frankly, the people on the outside of your context might not appreciate what you've built, but they will appreciate, they will be inspired by the life that you live. It's not what you're building that's going to inspire everybody. It's who you are. It's the lifestyle you live. It's the sacrifice and the faith, the generosity, the kindness, the joy, the peace that you carry. It's the spirit of who you are that speaks louder than you, whatever you're going to build. So remember, our goal is to become wise master builders, but don't be consumed with building. Be consumed with becoming. That's this month's top five leadership lean-in. All right, perfect. So I want to pick that back up. We're talking about what keeps us excited, you know, what keeps us going. When you were talking, it reminded me of what Andy Stanley always says, that vision leaks.
Right.
Yeah. I got to keep the vision not in the team. I got to keep the vision in me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the hard part about it. Erica, what would you say? Like, how do you stay up and motivated?
I think... I've known you and Julia for over 10 years. Like, we've done a lot of church. I've been in a lot of church services.
Right.
And I think over the years I've had to learn, I've had to mature and take on the thinking of like you're planting yourself in the house.
Mm.
And I think it's really easy to stop getting excited about the thing that we're doing,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes ordinary. It's like a marriage. You have to constantly pour into it and it brings new life out of you.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think keeping the excitement in work and in church and in ministry is remembering the house, like remembering what we do and what it does to people.
Right.
And what our mission is as a whole.
Right.
That's like a, sounds kind of lofty, but I think it's really, it is what carries like your inner man, like, so to speak.
Yes, totally.
Is that. And I think that if you lose that sensitivity to the Holy Spirit, you lose that sensitivity to like the very practical thing of God is like, you plant, I'll flourish. Like, keep your feet here.
Yep.
And it might not feel exciting in the moment.
Right.
But you, when you reap like the harvest, so to speak, when you experience what you stayed in for so long, you're like, oh, that's why.
Right.
Here I am.
Wow.
So like, I guess what I'm saying is you're not meant to feel excited every day.
That's it.
And I think there's something to be said about people. And this is the biggest lesson I've learned, honestly, since knowing you and Julia and being in ministry is like, if you could just stay.
Yep.
And keep your feet where they're at.
Yeah.
Like it will start, things will start pulling, growing up in front of your eyes that you're I never even dreamed of that.
Right,
right, right.
And I think that's what makes you excited for the new day.
Totally.
Right. You know, and like there's, you know, now we get excited about like ways to organize our storage. Right. And that's exciting to me.
Yeah.
Whereas like 4 years ago, I was super excited that we were on Sunset Boulevard. Like I think as you mature the church and you mature with the vision.
That's right.
You just are excited about new things.
Yep,
and if you find yourself like you're not excited anymore, I guess the roadblock that maybe you're at is that you're not reinventing yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where you get stuck.
Well, I think two things out of what you just said. Number one is that I don't have to live excited.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I don't have to live that way. I have to live disciplined.
And consistent.
And my disciplines are what create some eventual excitement.
Yes. Right.
So, you know, it always goes back to like self-feeding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I listened to this great podcast recently with John Townsend, you know, from Cloud and Townsend, you know, the Boundaries book. And I just consume them and what they have. I just think they're brilliant. Yeah. But he said most leaders, they think about you need enough sleep, you need good nutrition, you need to exercise. That's just going to keep you excited, your disciplines. He said, but most leaders don't realize that what actually keeps us really excited in life is relationships.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so we think it's like the vision, it's the discipline, He's like, but actually, most leaders have relationships that are all drains.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Right. And they don't have relationships that are gains.
Right.
So how do you, in your life, wow, how do you have some relationships? Like, you know, for when, for us, for, you know, our example, for, we just got back from Idaho. Now, did I want to go to Idaho? You know, first thought is, I don't know if I'm on vacation in Idaho, but the best time. And it's not about what we're doing. Right. It's about who we're with.
Right.
And these are some relationships, guys like Jason Kennedy, guys like Rich Jr., that for me, getting around them, I'm just laughing the whole time. It's
right,
an unplug. It's a reset. And those are gains for me. So I come back into my context. I'm excited.
Yes. Right. Right. Right.
Was it my Bible reading? Yeah, I read my Bible every morning. That's great. And it was also there. The right, discipline was also there.
Yeah.
But then the gains of relationship, right, I think most leaders get themselves in trouble because they just go like discipline, discipline, robot, robot. Yeah. And wow, you got to sometimes go like, I just need a friend right now.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I need someone I can be vulnerable with,
right,
and someone I can talk to about, so like, these are my roadblocks, these are my right, issues right now, this is what I'm frustrated about. And gains relationships to me are not all like Idaho vacations. They're also authentic, genuine relationships of right, connectivity,
right, so
where I can yeah, connect with somebody. And wow, actually, I feel like a breakfast with somebody or a lunch with somebody could do more than a vacation sometimes.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Because it's like, really good, man, it's getting me back excited. Just being able to relate with you and talk right, with you about right, my real so issues
good, yeah,
yeah,
helps put wind in my sails to stay excited about the vision and the task.
Yeah, yep, right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know. Kelly, what do you think about? How do you keep going? How do you continue your moxie?
There's the word.
Sorry, we
word
talked about
day,
it before we recorded
word
it.
Day.
Moxie, great word.
Great word.
Is that with yep, an X?
Yeah, use it in a sentence.
Yeah.
No, I think there's like a level of personal leadership in that, just self-identifying where I'm at. What do I need today? What do I need this week? What's our season like? And I think realistically, our lives move pretty quick. So identifying that, you know, a month could go by and you can say, oh, I haven't really like spent time, you know, seeing friends or even like right, having real authentic conversation.
Right.
But I also identify that a lot of times when I'm saying I'm not getting poured into, it's like, well, have I poured into yeah, anybody?
Right,
I think
right, right.
A lot of times my cup will be filled when I'm having more of a pastoral conversation that you go into thinking, I'm just going to pour into this person and not get anything in return. And then you leave and you're like, this is what it's all about.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you get so filled from that. So I think, you know, just identifying when you're like, it's all about me. I need this. No one's pouring into me. It's like, well, who are you pouring into?
Yeah.
And sometimes you're surprised by
right,
by that, but just self-identifying. I need a friend right now. I need an honest conversation. I need to, you know, vent in a healthy way to a friend, a friend that's trusted, a friend that's going to guide you back to the right direction, and not just someone who's going to let you blow off steam to blow off steam, but just right, someone who's has the same values, same beliefs, and just realizing that for yourself.
Totally. So well said. I think... the last thing I want to talk about today is, so, you know, we're covering teams, and then there's conflict with teams. And because of everything you deal with from an emotional outtake, you have to really be careful about staying excited. And one of the things that happens when people don't stay excited, or because of the conflict, or because of the team dynamic, there's a lot of departure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow.
In our business, especially, the turnover can be, you know, right, in some cases pretty rapid. In cities that are transient, like Los Angeles, it could even be more rampant than, you know, rural areas. But I want to talk about this idea of church hopping, church hoppers, which I think right away you smiled, because I think they get a negative connotation.
Right.
And I don't even know if there is that many of them or if they're this bad group. I don't see them that
right,
way.
Right.
A lot of times when people transition from a church, in my opinion, I think this about people. Number one, people go to church where they want to.
Yeah.
And people go to church where their friends go.
Yep.
Right.
So that's kind of like always a safe bet. They're going to go to where they like to go, and they're going to go where their friends are. But sometimes there is the exception that someone leaves, and they leave poorly or they leave bad right, because the grass is greener on the other side right, or I've gotten all the fun I could get out of here.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the novelty of it wore off. And so I want to go check out that, you know, thing down the street. The thing about leaving a church to me that I think people discover maybe after two or three times is, oh, wait a second. I'm the common denominator of the problem.
Yeah.
It's I don't know every if it's day. The church.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about like you've had team members leave, you've had people, you know, leave your organization. What would you say? What would be the encouragement to somebody to stay? What's on it? What's on the other side of staying? Mm-hmm. You know, staying in the team and staying with the vision and staying committed and staying faithful. You know, what would you encourage somebody? I remember Pastor Jude is someone I look up to. He was like, after 5 years of being in one spot, he was like, "Ooh, you hit your fifth year. You're just now going to start to see your fruit."
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
I was like, oh my gosh, so many people have missed out
yes.
on their investment.
Right.
Because they left before it got really good.
Right.
Right.
What would you say to that, Erica? We'll start with you.
Yeah. I think that I love what you said. I think you follow yourself wherever you go.
Yeah.
And so if you leave on bad terms or maybe, you know, you left because of a preference or whatever, the novelty will eventually wear off in your new church. Mm. And then that same problem will come up.
Yeah.
But I think that what to your point is if you can learn to stay, you'll grow.
Yeah.
Right.
But if you keep leaving at like a 3 year mark, maybe 2.5 years, 3 years, you're going to stunt your growth.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you're only going to grow to that level of the maturity that you have until you don't have the maturity to understand where, if you could just stay.
Yeah.
What's on the other side.
Yeah.
And then I think, on the bigger picture of church is there's like a consumer and there's like a church builder. You're more than a volunteer. You're a participant now of this church. It's your home.
Mm.
And when you have a home, you invest in your home.
Ownership.
You make your home better.
Mm.
You bring people inside of your home. And so I think my thought on church hopping is just when is it going to be home for you? And then when are you going to make that place better?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because there's a call in your life. And if you keep hopping, your call becomes so like God can't do much with the call that just keeps moving around.
Right.
So yeah, that's my thought on if you go to this church, what are you doing to help it?
Yeah.
Right.
Are you adding the gift that God gave you and using it to its full potential?
Right.
Or do you get so bored or so disgruntled that you go somewhere else and now you've done a disservice to the thing that God put on your life.
Yeah.
And a disservice to the church that's being built in that community.
Geez. Right.
Yeah.
So that's always just been my thought on church. And I've had the privilege of being in church, in one church for the whole time. Like I only know Zoe, you know?
Right.
And I only know the church I got saved. Like I only know two places in my life in church. And I've watched God do a lot in me in that time. And I just couldn't imagine going somewhere else and feeling the depth that I have now. Not that I'm like such a deep person, but I just mean like God deposits a lot in you when you stay.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
So
I was thinking about this might seem like an extreme example, but I almost think about like a marriage.
Yes.
Yeah,
you know, like I don't want to be down in my, you know, fifth or seventh marriage.
Right.
There's something about just staying committed to this relationship.
Yeah.
I think it has to do with the ability of being assigned to a place.
Right, I agree.
And when you're assigned to a place, you're not as critical. There is no perfect church. There's no perfect place. There's no perfect leader.
No.
And so instead of looking at going like, we have these problems. It's like, I want to be a part of the solution.
Yeah, right.
I want to help take it to the next level.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be critical or maintain a critical spirit. Whenever you're just a spectator, it's always easy to criticize.
Yeah, so easy.
If you're a participator, there's ownership and shared responsibility of going like, how can I help this thing get a little bit better?
Yep.
Yeah.
I get fearful for people that hop around because I don't think that they'll ever get to this place of true ownership.
Yes.
Yeah.
The back door is always kind of open.
Yep.
And so there's that kind of hireling spirit that's just kind of like, I can come and go.
Right. Yep.
It's transactional a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and I had the thought of like, what else does that play into in your life? Like if you can't commit to the house, how do you commit in relationship? How do you commit in your career? Like, I think it all plays in together.
Yeah.
It's you know.
Because no matter what relationship you're in, you're going to hit a quitting point.
Yeah. Right.
You're going to hit it again.
Yep.
And then you're going to hit it again. And you just keep on powering through and persevering. That's any relationship. That's any close friendship.
Right.
That's marriage. That's, your workplace that you guys got to keep on breaking through. I get sad because I don't think a lot of people that hop or you know just leave churches flippantly understand the stakes of it.
Yeah.
What's that stake of their growth?
Right.
Exactly.
What would you say, Kelly?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think even Pastor Jensen in the last Leadership Lean In touched on favor. Like he always prays for favor. I think that comes when you are planted. You know, you're praying for favor. You want to be known and needed at your church. But that comes with serving the church. Mm. You know, it doesn't start to get fun until you're on a team. It doesn't start to get fun until you're a part of the solution and can be a part of the win and the excitement of the win and, and achieving goals.
Yep.
But yeah, I think where you're planted, you'll grow. And that's for everything you mentioned, like it's with a relationship, you know, where, you know, 5 years into marriage and we are on our second kid and it's exciting because there's commitment there and there's, it's disarming to know, like, it's not an option for us to give up. And I think that goes for your organization, your team, your church, you know, just coming in and saying, I'm not giving up. This is my church, this is my home. I'm a part of the solution. I've identified problems, but I want to fix it. Who can I talk to about this? But also identifying the vehicles of like, you know, I want community, join a connect group. I think there's a lot of times people leave and they're like, I didn't have community. And it's like, we had all these options for you to find community, find friends, things like that. So just knowing that a lot of times, unfortunately, I think we are the problem.
Yeah.
Ourselves are the problem.
Wow.
And just being able to recognize that.
Totally.
But also, you know, I just had this conversation with someone actually on my team and just staying sweet, you know, you always say that, but just stay sweet with people. We were able to navigate and say, oh, she's going to stay. She's amazing. She loves it here. It was just, there's always something deeper behind it.
Man.
Yes. You know, I think we've always learned that when people, you know, anytime there's conflict or a problem, there's always something behind what is being said. So we identified it and, you know, we addressed it. But because I, praise God, stayed sweet at the beginning and talked it through with her. I wasn't just like, well, you're out. You know, I was like, no, you have equity with me. I'm in it with you.
Yep.
If it is, if you do want to go, I'd love to introduce you to a new church to get planted.
Yes.
You know, like we're after people's souls. We're after people flourishing in a house and getting planted. So if it's not here, let me help you get plugged in and get planted there.
Yeah.
You know,
that's awesome. Because if they don't, they'll miss out on their moxie.
True.
That got me.
See what I did there?
Phenomenal.
Nate, wrap us up. We're coming to the end of the episode. What would you say? What would you encourage somebody that's kind of even right now considering they're frustrated in their context and they're feeling like I got to get out?
Sure.
What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say that commitment is the most desired and least given commodity in our culture. Mm. Everyone wants commitment, but they won't give it until they get it.
Yeah.
And so to making the choice right now, if you're on the fence, whether or not you should stay somewhere, go make the choice. I'm going to choose to be committed even before they choose to commit.
It's great.
And then you just watch and see as you're committed, all of a sudden it'll be reciprocated and you'll begin to grow, you begin to see things differently. And you become an owner, not just an employee or a participator.
It's great.
Right.
You guys, this was fun.
This was great.
I feel like we need to do this again.
Yeah.
I don't know when, but
cheers,
mates.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Cheers to another good one.
Do you ever feel like you want to know more about the Bible, but that it's kind of hard to understand? Do you want to share your faith with your friends, but have a hard time figuring out how to do that? Do you want to learn how to connect the Bible to your real life? Well, then this is the show for you. My name is Rachel, and I'm your host. I've been a children's pastor for a long time, and one of my favorite things is helping kids learn how to understand the Bible. I think that sometimes people think that the Bible is just for adults, but God actually really wants kids to know about Him. So on this podcast, we're going to learn all about God's big story and how He shows Himself to us through the Bible. As we learn together what the stories in the Bible mean, we can learn how to live out our faith in our everyday life. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode.
My name's Preston Sprinkle, and I host the Theology in the Raw podcast. Theology in Raw aims to help believers to think Christianly about theological and cultural issues by engaging in curious conversations with a diverse range of thoughtful people. I have conversations with a wide range of different guests who come from different perspectives, and no topic is off limits. Sexuality, abortion, politics, LGBTQ, warfare, violence, marijuana, immigration, you name it. If you have a theological or cultural issue that you have been wrestling with over 1,100 episodes, we've probably talked about it on Theology in Raw. Along with conversations with various people, I also address questions sent in from my audience every month. And occasionally, I will talk about some of my latest research projects that I'm currently working on. Theology in Raw is not for everyone. It is uncut, uncensored, and I don't give trigger warnings. So check out Theology in Raw through your favorite podcast app.